This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Now, it's the Michael K. Show podcast.
Oh, yeah. 5:02. We're ready for the weekend. And for the Jets and their fans, it's a good weekend because they can sit back and relax because the Jets took care of business yesterday, beating the Bills 19-13 in Toronto on Thursday Night Football. It's time now to talk with Rex Ryan, the head coach of the Jets. And the Rex Ryan Report is brought to you by Wise, the official potato chip and cheese doodle of the New York Jets. Snack loud, snack proud. Eat Wise. And we bring in the head coach of the Jets, Rex Ryan. Rex, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you?
I'm all right. First things first, how is Mark Sanchez?
We got the MRI back, and basically he's got a sprained PCL in his right leg. So, that's good news for us. It's something that we're optimistic about. Hopefully he'll be able to play this coming up game against Tampa, but again we'll let we'll see how he feels. Obviously if we were playing tomorrow or Sunday he wouldn't be ready to go, but hopefully by the time we get ready to play Tampa he'll be feeling like he can play.
All right, Rex, I'm going to disagree with you, and I hope you take this in the with the respect that I'll give it to you. I don't understand yesterday why you would criticize Sanchez when that's a game that you guys had to win, and you're up by just one score, 16-10, in the third quarter of a game. If he slides feet first, you don't get the first down. You punt, they probably get the ball at the 50, but the way it played out after he gets the first down, you end up getting a couple more yards, and then you punt, and they get the ball at the 6. I thought that was a huge play by Mark Sanchez. Why wouldn't you want him doing that?
Well, I mean, I don't disagree with you. It was a huge play and did give us a first down, and we got another set of downs. But it's risk reward. You know, we've got to make sure that that Mark understands we need him around. You know, we need him healthy. Would the game have been, any different or closer if, would we have extended our lead had Mark played? I mean, who knows? But I mean, he needs for us to be successful, we need Mark in that lineup as much as possible. And the big thing is he has to understand that that play in itself, that was a big play in a game, but over his career, I don't want there to be a catastrophic play that ends up cutting this guy's career short, and I think that's the big picture.
But don't you think, Rex, that, I mean, football's such a violent game, you could slide feet first. I mean, Steve Young got a concussion sliding feet first, so I mean, there's no sure way to play football without getting hurt, and I remember, you talked to us when we came and visited you at the beginning, you love this guy's moxie and what he's about. Aren't you trying, I mean, no pun intended, aren't you taking the legs out from under him and asking him not to do what he does?
Well, in a little bit. Obviously he is a great competitor. There's no question about it, but we just wanted to play smart. And I mean, look at the, I've seen a million, I know Steve Young might have gotten a concussion, stuff sliding and things, but I've seen a ton of quarterbacks, careers be shortened by not trying to slide, by just getting the heck knocked out on broken ribs and all that kind of stuff. Steve McNair was about as tough a guy as I've ever seen. He had his sternum broke. So, obviously Chad Pennington here with the shoulders. I mean, you see more of those when you're diving forward than you do by sliding.
I know that you have the red light, green light, orange light system, when he's quarterbacking. It almost seems like shouldn't there be a red light, green light, orange system for him diving? Because, again, I guess this is a silly hypothetical, but if you don't win that game yesterday, you have no chance to make the playoffs. I mean, would you take him getting hurt for the rest of the season for you guys to make the playoffs?
No.
So you'd rather not make the playoff and keep him healthy?
I'm saying this. I think for the betterment of our football team, I think it's unrealistic to think we'd make the playoffs without him. I think he's that impactful for our football team. And in the long run, I mean, I don't want this guy getting hurt. I always think of player safety first, and that's what we're doing here. you know, I'm as competitive as anybody. But I don't think it's realistic to think that we can make the playoffs without him.
All right, now then I got to ask you this then. You're playing Cincinnati, the last game of the year. There's 2 minutes left, 4th and 6, and you got to get the first down. And if you win the game, you're going to the playoffs. What if he has to dive head first?
We'll cross that bridge when the time comes.
But you know what?
But again, you know, I'm saying, I mean, I'm looking at it this way. No one down. I mean, if I want him to get the mentality and have the where it's instinctive for him to slide, not the other way around. You know, I want this guy to be our quarterback for the next 10 years and us to put up some multiple championships and not just win one game. You know, I'm worried about the long haul. And I think if he's healthy and he can play and, you know, and finish games and stuff, we're going to win a lot more than we're going to lose.
Are you concerned, though, Rex, that he's thinking too much on the field? Okay, is this a slide thing? Is this a head-first thing? Is this an important down? Is Rex going to get mad at me? You're going to take away just the natural inclination of him being an athlete and a gamer?
No, I mean, I want him to be a gamer. I want him to, but I want him to be healthy in these games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my concern is for his safety and for his health. I've been on the other side and knocked plenty quarterbacks out by doing just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing a lot of guys get knocked out that way and their careers get shortened. And I don't want that to happen to this young man.
No.
I think he's got a chance to be an outstanding player. And you know, I think that's the message. He moves great. You know, outside the pocket, he's able to, you know, he's got a great, you know, pocket presence and everything else. It's just when he takes off to run, I want him to have, I want it to be instinctive where he slides instead of going head first.
All right, now
that's the only thing I'm saying.
Your honesty makes us love you. I mean, makes the media love you. We love the fact that you just wear it on the sleeve and you say what you think. But let me take a different tack. Why wouldn't you have told Mark Sanchez all that stuff yesterday rather than airing him out in public?
I'm just going to, I mean, I tell him that. I've told him it forever. I've tried everything known to man with him. I brought Joe Girardi in, you know, to teach him how to slide. So, you know, this isn't a thing that we just came on to, you know, 2 days ago. This is something that happened in training camp. We tried to fix it then. We've talked about it all the time. And I just want him to understand that it's about, you know, we got to find a way to get it done. And if it takes me to get it done through the media, through whatever, trust me, anything I've ever said to the media, I've told him 100 times. So, you know, this is, you know, we're joined at the hip. You know, this is a guy that we laid it out there when we drafted him, you know, traded up all those, you know, all our, you know, a bunch of players and picks and everything else to move up to get this guy. And we want him to be the face of our franchise for a long time, not just 1 year.
John, with Rex Ryan, the head coach of the Jets here on the Michael Kay Show, 1050 ESPN, New York. How big a win was that for your team?
Well, it was big. I mean, you know, every win's a big win. That gave us, you know, a lot of momentum. We've had, you know, two games in the last 5 days. You know, one thing that nobody talks about, and we have the number one defense in the National Football League. And I think coming into the season, there might have been a lot of skeptics over there that maybe thought that we weren't going to be that good on defense. I think we're one of the top rushing teams in the league. You know, we're a team that nobody wants to play. And I think we've said that. And I think as long as we're healthy and, you know, we'll make a good account of ourselves. And again, we're just, you know, our focus is just going to be on Tampa Bay. We're going to have a couple, you know, the players are going to have a couple days off and then get right back at it and get after Tampa.
Now, I know that you just have to worry about your team, but we were talking this back and forth, kind of a fun topic. Two teams that you have to be concerned about are playing on Sunday. And it seems like the general perception is, gee, let's hope that the New England Patriots lose for the Jets. But the way we figure it here is that in order for the Jets, even if you guys went out to catch the Patriots, they've got to lose 3 of their remaining 5 games, which is unlikely. And we almost think that you want the Patriots to win on Sunday, and this puts separation between you and the Dolphins. Have you given any thought to that?
Not really.
I mean, it's hard for me to cheer
for New England. You know, but like I said, you know, realistically, we're not in that situation yet. We have to take care of our business, and you know, we'll let the chips fall where they may. But, you know, our focus is going to be on Tampa, and that's really it. You know, we'll enjoy the games, watching the games and stuff like that. But it's, you know, we're not even at that stage where we can have really a rooting interest from one team over the other team.
All right, now we have to do this every time we talk. How great is Darrell Revis? I mean, he never disappoints. He shuts down great wide receiver after great wide receiver. Yesterday, Terrell Owens, 3 catches, 31 yards, most of them insignificant. That's pretty amazing what this guy does.
It is amazing. And really, we've talked about it, like you say, every week we talk about it. And it's something that shouldn't be taken for granted, but almost is. I think the national, you know, the national media is starting to figure out what the local media already knows, that this guy is a special player. And they don't come around very often. And he really is. If our team was having the success that, that I thought we would, you know, win loss-wise, he would probably be the defensive player of the year. The fact that we're the number one defense in the National Football League speaks volumes about his play in particular, because it allows us to do a lot of different things that, you know, a lot of creative things that most teams can't do.
Coach, if I could just go back to something about Sanchez for a second. You're clearly exasperated. And so I'm just wondering what that's based on. Do you have a timeline for his learning curve based on, I don't know, what you saw from Joe Flacco with the Ravens last year, or other rookies you observed, or your personal timeline for his growth? What's that frustration based on?
No, frustration is I want him healthy, you know, and that's it. I mean, we'll do whatever it takes. The fact he got, you know, that, you know, 2 weeks in a row he's had, you know, an injury and things like that. And if we think we can avoid it, that's the thing that's disappointing. The kid is, he's got, nobody's going to question his courage and everything else. You know, he absolutely has that. But we're just trying to help him, you know, and I think that's, you know, we have his best interests at heart. You know, of course he's a great football player and a playmaker, but he does so many things that he doesn't need to, you know, if he learns to slide, that's pretty much it. And I think he'll be able to protect himself better that way. And that's basically all I'm saying. I mean, I'm treating him, I'm harder on Mark than I am on any player on this team. There is no question about it. But one, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, he's the leader of our team, even though he's a rookie, and I know he can take it.
You were very conservative with Kellen Clemens. He only threw 2 passes in the 2 quarters that he played last night. If for some reason the opportunity presented itself where he was to start in Tampa, would it be the same conservative play, or do you think you'd be able to give him a little bit more in a full game than you've given him in the last 2?
You know, it's hard to say. I think there's certain particulars in that game when Kellen came in. We actually attempted 5 passes, but we were sacked 3 times. So we only got 2 passes off. So that's a concern right there. But the other thing is, you know, if he's the guy and he's going to play against Tampa, then I'm sure he'll feel more comfortable with the game plan and actually get reps during the week of practice. So I'm sure I'd feel a little more, you know, a little better about it than, you know, maybe when a guy's coming in cold.
Rex, Thomas Jones has had an unbelievable season, 1,000 yards for 5 straight years now. I got the impression at the beginning of the season that Leon Washington was the back that everybody was looking at as the primary guy. With him going down, how much do you think Jones has raised his stock in the eyes of the organization?
Oh, Bonnie, I disagree with you there. You know, you're talking about, you know, Thomas Jones had led the AFC in rushing the year before, and he's going to be at the top of that list again this year. So I don't think that was it at all. I just think that Leon and Thomas are, you know, really complemented each other the year before, and that's what our intent was again this year. But it's unfortunate Leon got hurt. But Thomas was always thought of as being the bell cow, so to speak.
I'm wondering, Coach, have you talked to Mark today, and did you reiterate some of the stuff that you said to the media to him?
No, I talked to Mark last night.
How did he take it?
Well, I mean, Mark is great. We have, it's not a father-son thing. It's more big brother, maybe, than, you know, the younger brother and things. We have a great relationship with each other. But, you know, and the fact that he, you know, he met, you know, he went and talked to the media after the game and all that kind of stuff. You know, that's not easy to do in those situations, but he, you know, he manned up and did it, all those type of things. But he knows where I'm coming from.
I think that one final thing, I think Kellen Clemens might be feeling a little left out. You know, you haven't told him he can't dive.
Trust me, he came to me on the ball was backed up. I said, all right, now we're in red here, we're in all this, and he goes, Coach, I don't think it's red, I think it's maroon. I got a great deal of respect and admiration for him. He's a tough guy, and you know, we're fortunate to have a quality quarterback behind Mark like Kellen.
Coach, have a great weekend. Enjoy the rare weekend off, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Yeah, it is kind of strange. You know, we did win that game, but it seems like all I talk about is Sanchez. But anyway,
Sanchez.
I appreciate it.
He's a Sanchez.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. That's why. Thanks, Coach.
All right, guys.
All right. That's Rex Ryan. So you know what's interesting that comes out of that? He did the thing with the media. Because he didn't think it was getting through to Clemens, so he essentially did it to embarrass him, and to Sanchez to say, listen, if you're not going to listen to me when I tell you, if you're not going to listen to Joe Girardi, I'm going to bring our dirty laundry out front for everybody to know, and maybe you'll listen then. I think that's why he did it. So that answers that question.
And that's okay as long as you impress that upon him before you went to the media. As to accentuate the statement you had already made. I don't think it would be right to do that before spoke to him.
Oh, you mean like right after the game for him? No, I don't think it's a bad deal, because if he has spoken to him over and over again and the guy won't listen,
right,
then I'm going to go to the media, and then maybe he'll be so embarrassed, maybe
right,
on the back page, people are going to talk about it, and you know what, maybe he'll get it now.
Well, he's never really hesitated to call him out on anything, though.
Right. Well, I think smart coaches, smart managers use the media to their advantage to send messages, and I think that's what he did. And he kind of laughed when I asked him about that final game of the season. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it about whether he can dive then, which really isn't an answer, unless do you pull the plug on him now? Now you can dive? Very, very interesting stuff.
You're in the middle of the Michael K. Show podcast.
Kellen, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. Was it weird to be in there for a long stretch? It's been a long time for you.
It has been a long time, and it was. I'll tell you what, it was nice to be back out there with the guys, though. It was, and especially nice to get a win. You know, they've been few and far between the last few weeks, so it's been nice to put a couple together.
Hey, Kellen, because it has been so long, it's just hard to throw yourself back in there. Did they cut down what you could do and just said, all right, let's just keep it clean right here and not try to take too many chances?
Well, I think when I came into the game, we were ahead by 6 points, and our defense was playing exceptionally well. I think Oppenheimer kept the ball on the ground quite a bit. You know, obviously we ran the ball quite a bit throughout the remainder of the third and fourth quarters, and just tried to keep the clock going. What we didn't want to do was make any big mistakes and put our defense in a hole. And fortunately we did that. And then, you know, the defense, as they've done for the majority of the season, did a great job of finishing them off.
When you see Mark Limpet out there, tell me what goes through your mind. I mean, is an excitement that you're going to get a chance right now, or do you feel, you know, scared for your teammate?
Your first reaction is always for your teammate. Mark's obviously a great kid. He's put in a lot of hard work, and he's really, especially over the last game, you know, I'm going to call it a game and a half because he only played really half of this Buffalo game. He's really grown a lot as a quarterback and made some great strides, and is really making good decisions, throwing the football well. He's doing a lot of good things. My first initial reaction was, shoot, I hope it's not serious. I hope he's okay. Then the guys are calling, hey, you're in. So I just tried to go out there and try to help out in any way I could.
Does the speed of the game catch up with you? I mean, you could do all the practicing you want, but I'm sure it's not the speed of an NFL game. Does that take you a little while to catch up with?
You know, it does. It takes you a little while, but you know, my first couple plays were runs, so I got a chance to kind of get back into the groove of things. But you know, even then, it was a quarter and a half that I got to play. We didn't call very many passes, but a chance maybe this week. You know, depending on how Mark is, how his knee recovers, but a chance to get some reps just with our offense and get back in the rhythm of that will help going forward if I'm called upon again.
Kellen Clemens is our guest here on the Jets Player Spotlight. Michael K. Show, 1050 ESPN in New York. Botch one snap, one time you fumbled. Heart in your mouth when the ball's on the ground?
Hey, the fumble, now I owe DeBrickashaw Ferguson a really nice dinner because he was right there when I needed him. It was a great play on his part. Yeah, especially because we're backed up. You know, that would have been probably first and goal for Buffalo. That was the last place we wanted to put our defense in. So, like I said, I owe Brick big time.
Now, you know, we've been talking a lot today because Rex kind of jumped on Mark for diving head first. I mean, are those rules given to you as well that under no circumstance should you dive head first?
The sliding thing as of right now, I'm pretty sure just applies to Mark. You know, I haven't been instructed, I guess. You know, and I didn't have the knee issue coming in that Mark did. You know, especially to this last game, and now he's got a couple of knees that are giving him a little bit of problem. But you know, it's tough to make a decision. Mark's a great competitor. It was 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. If he slides there, do we get the first down? Do we not? It's so tough to make that decision just split second, spur of the moment. Obviously, if it's first or second down, slide, preserve yourself. You know, and in hindsight, the fact that he hurt his knee on that play, you'd wish he would have slid. But it's so tough to pull off and go feet first when, you know, you're as much of a competitor as Mark is in that situation.
We talked before, Kellen, about the speed of the game. With the speed of the game and everything that's coming at you at a quarterback, I would think it's got to be impossible to process that. Okay, this is the time I'm going to go feet first. All right, other time I'm going to go head first. All right, this is an important part of the game. This part, and to exacerbate matters, he's just a kid.
I tell you what, there's a lot of stuff that you have to process in a very, very short amount of time. And like I said earlier, Mark is doing a better job as the year goes on of making those decisions and making, you know, good decisions for both himself as far from a health standpoint, but as far as for us as a team and ball security and just making good decisions managing the football game. And that just, it all comes with time. It all comes with experience. And he's, you know, with each snap that he takes out there versus live bullets on Sunday, he's getting that much better. So it comes with time. You know, the guys that have been playing, you know, for years, the Bradys and the Mannings, they know when to go head first and when to put their body on the line. But they also know that, you know, they're the CEOs of the ship and they need to take care of their bodies, and they know when to slide and when to run out of bounds and when to throw it away.
Because of the knee problems with Mark, how closely will you be monitoring him? Will you be checking in the trainer's room every day? Because, you know, you do have, because of the Thursday game, you're going to have a longer stretch before you play your next game. How closely will you be monitoring that? Because if he can't go, it's you.
Well, you know, I'll visit with Mark. I think as of right now, it's just a sprained PCL. So
right.
I don't know. I've never had a PCL sprain. You know, I don't know how easy that is to play on or whatnot. You know, I'll take whatever reps I can get during practice this week, and I'll be ready on Sunday. If I'm called upon to play, I'll be ready to play, and if not, then that makes Mark's ready to go, and you know, that's good for his health.
Kellen, it's Bonnie Bernstein. Yeah,
how are you, Bonnie?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
You know, it's a great day. It really is.
Yeah, I have to give you your props because you've been around 4 years. It's not like you were a slouch at Oregon. You're on your way to breaking a bunch of school records your senior year, but then you hurt your ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And you've sat behind Pennington and Favre and now the rookie, and you've always had such a great attitude where I think a lot of quarterbacks might have gotten sour. And I'm just wondering why that is.
Well, first of all, thank you. It means, you know, just the compliment means a lot to me. It really does. Because I'd be lying if I said that it's been easy. I sat behind, you know, Chad Pennington for the first, I guess, year and a half, and he was such, Chad's a very good quarterback, but he is an incredible person and father and husband. He was such a great example to me of what it takes to really be a professional in this league. And, you know, I've tried to do a lot of the things that he did and that he taught me how to do. And then, you know, on the other side of things, I have to just, I guess, credit my parents on how they brought me up. And you know, I also have a heck of a support staff at home with between my wife and my kids. I come home and Kate doesn't care if I'm, Kate's my 20-month-old daughter. She doesn't care if I played and threw four touchdowns or didn't play at all or threw four picks. She doesn't care. So it's nice to just, I guess I keep it all in perspective when I'm at home.
Colin, I know you guys are a tight group offensively. You've got Ainge there, of course, Sanchez. Do you think, though, it would have benefited your growth and Sanchez's growth had you had a veteran quarterback in that group?
I don't know. It's I know that we're sitting at 6-6 right now, and the playoffs are still a very real possibility for us. So, you know, the speculation of what if and should we have and all that stuff, you know, who knows? I guess, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but we'll see where we're sitting at the end of the year and where Mark is sitting here in, you know, a few years when he's had a chance to really, really dive into the system and get more experience and you know, have a chance to show what he can do. Because I tell you what, the kid is as talented as anybody out there. He just, once he gets some more experience and has some more, you know, live action, he's going to show everybody just exactly why, you know, he's the future of the franchise.
All right, Kellen Clemons, let's put a bow on your day. You come in, you're Mariano Rivera, and you get the save, and
yep,
your school is going to the Rose Bowl. Not bad.
I tell you what, it was a pretty darn good Thursday night.
Absolutely. Well, thanks a lot for coming on with us, Kellen, and we appreciate your time.
All right, appreciate you guys having me.
All right, that's Kellen Clemons.
You're in the middle of the Michael K. Show podcast.
Final hour of the Michael K. Show here on a Friday, a football Friday. A lot of stuff going on. And a lot of big games this weekend. And who better to talk to than one of our favorite guests ever? He is the writer for Sports Illustrated and SI.com and on NBC's Football Night in America. A busy man. Also has a best-selling book out there. A Monday Morning Quarterback. That is Peter King. He joins us now. Peter, how you doing?
Well, I don't know if I'd use the adjective best-selling. It is the best-selling book in Montclair, New Jersey, and in the King household.
And it's the best-selling book you've ever written.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Good point, Michael.
Then you know what? Then I'm saying it's a bestseller.
It's the best book I've read on a plane returning from Las Vegas in the last month.
Thank you, Bonnie. You're the best.
There you go.
Michael feels the same way because we were reading it at the same time.
At the same time. Now, I'm sure you've heard all of the Rex Ryan stuff, kind of excoriating Mark Sanchez for diving headfirst to get a first down in a close game. So I'll tell you what I think. I think he was wrong. I think Rex Ryan was wrong. I think that's a play you have to get the first down. What's your take?
I think there's two ways to look at this. Number one is, if your head coach has been telling you forever that I want you to play a certain way, and I want you to make sure that you do not, you know, that you don't expose yourself to injury, that's the way you have to play. No matter whether you feel it's the best way, smartest way, whatever way, that's number one. Number two, since the beginning of time, we've been watching players do things that, in the grand scheme of things, for the long haul, you say, "Hey, don't do that, don't do it." But when they do it and it works, you're excited and you give them credit. They're gutsy. And so I think both of those things apply here, but I think the first one overrides the second one. Whether we agree with that, whether we don't agree with that, the fact is, if your head coach is telling you, dude, you're going to learn to slide or I'm playing Kellen Clemons, and I don't think he's used those words, but, you know, he wants them to slide. So in my opinion, I think he's got to slide.
It's interesting because we just had on Mark Schlereth, and he said you've got to do what your players want you to do, because if he had slid feet first, first, then they would have looked at him like he was soft, and they actually looked at him the right way, said, even if your coach says not to do it, you've got to do what your teammates expect of you. And Mike Golic said earlier in the day on Mike in the Morning that Rex Ryan was 100% wrong. Every player would do it. Every player should do it. They should try to get the first down in a close game.
I don't think I disagree in that. In a close game, everybody wants you to make the play, but I think there's a larger question here, and that is, I was at the Jets when they were 3-0, was preparing to do a story on the team, and was in talking to Rex. He mentioned to me at the time, we got to get this kid to learn how to slide. You know, he's exposing himself to too much injury. What I'm saying is that I think you know, your team, you've got to look up to your head coach. And if your head coach is telling you what to do, and he's telling you that he does not want you, even at the risk of missing a first down, that he doesn't want you to do this, then you shouldn't do it. So, in other words, I've got to side with Ryan in saying that whether he's right or wrong, he's the coach, he's the law, he's the sheriff.
Does it bother you, Peter, as a Red Sox fan, that they brought in Girardi and not Francona?
You know what? When I heard that story, I said, geez, I mean, the Jets, to me, lead the league in headlines. You know,
it's unbelievable.
It's amazing. And they make more headlines during the week than not. And again, I'm not saying that Rex called and he said, hey, send the most famous guy you can or anything like that. But that's almost how it seems. I mean, where's Brett Gardner? Don't you think Brett Gardner could slide a little bit? Don't they have a good AAA guy living somewhere in North Jersey? I don't know. It just seemed sort of a classic Jetsy move.
Yeah, I mean, you could have head coach at Montclair State come in. I mean, he could have done it too.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, at the end of the day, I think what he's trying to do is prolong the kid's career.
Now, speaking along those lines, the concussion story has been in the news for the last couple of weeks, and I think all three of us here doing the show, we were absolutely fascinated. Yesterday we had on Wayne Corbett, and we had him on because of Hofstra's program.
How's he doing, by the way?
You know what? I've never heard him, Peter, sound better. Although he said, you know, we said, well, when did your concussion symptoms stop? He said, I'll call you when it happens. And it was 4 years ago. He said he still has headaches and things like that. But he said something very interesting, and this is what makes me worry that the NFL can't do anything about concussions. He said that he would have died on the field if he could have. He would have died on the field, and they made him retire. He would have gone out there with these concussions, with these symptoms. How are they going to stop these players from being what they are?
They can't stop them completely. Read my column today online about Kurt Warner. I interviewed Warner at length Wednesday night, and he talks about even a guy like Kurt Warner, who's a legend, who's the no-doubt leader of that team, you know, who's, I don't want to say he's a legend, he's not a legend, but I mean, he's the leader of this team. And when he told the doctors the other day in Nashville that he didn't think he could play the game, the Cardinals were in Nashville to play Tennessee, he knew that once he said to the doctors that he wasn't feeling right, that they were going to say, you're not playing. And, you know, he felt the funny looks from coaches, from teammates. So, I mean, if that's going to happen, and he told me, I mean, this guy is as honest as the day is long, and he told me he actually thought of lying so that he could play in the game, and that's just not Kurt Warner. But I would just say this, Michael, that the only way this can work is if players are honest. And, you know, the other thing that has to be done that nobody is talking about, Roger Goodell mentioned it to me about a week and a half ago. He said, we have got to do something about making players wear the correct equipment. You know, so many players in this league, Michael, are wearing 6, 8, 10, 12-year-old helmets that are simply reconditioned and repainted every year because they tell their equipment guy, no, I don't want the new one. This is the one that feels comfortable. This is the one I like. And the advances in helmet technology are huge. So, and I talked to one of the doctors on the NFL committee today, Joseph Maroon. He's the guy who last week told Ben Roethlisberger, you're not playing. And he told me that one of the options they're actually looking into is literally taking away these helmets from players who refuse to wear the most modern helmets.
It's also interesting, and you guys had this game on NBC as well. I mean, you got a situation with the Steelers, okay, when Ben Roethlisberger can't play, and then Hines Ward kind of calls him a wimp. That's why you almost have to take it out of the player's hands, Peter. I kind of laugh when they say, oh, you know what, if you get concussed, you can't play that game. Well, no kidding, Sherlock. It should be that you can't play the next week either.
I would just say this. You know, I think the biggest problem, Jerome Bettis told me this the other day, I think the biggest problem with this whole Hines Ward thing is that Hines Ward didn't know the whole story when he sat down and talked to Bob Costas. I think the problem there was that the players were not communicated well with. And I bet, you know, Bonnie has to know these stories from the sidelines. I bet she's seen 20 guys over the years who are walking around like they're in a daze, and all of a sudden the next series you see that they're out there. That's the rule. Those are the guys that this rule really was intended for this week in the NFL. So I don't know. I mean, Bonnie, do you recall seeing many guys like that?
All the time. But when we had Krebet on yesterday, Peter, he said exactly, he echoed the sentiment of every player I've ever talked to about this, which is that you don't think about how fuzzy you are. You don't think about the long-term ramifications. You worry about losing your job.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. So now, hopefully, that with Roger Goodell addressing this, now it'll be mandatory that you take time off. You don't go back the day you hurt the injury. You take a week off. That hopefully players will start understanding with the accumulation of the research that it's something they need to think about. And let's hope. And this is sort of a pie in the sky thing. And I'd be interested in your opinion. I don't know how realistic it is for a player to be guaranteed to get his starting job back if he sits out with a concussion. But it would be nice to have peace of mind that if you're playing well when you get hurt in that capacity, that you don't have to worry about never seeing the starting job again.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Bonnie. I think that it's funny. A lot of these things that I've heard, recommendations or proposals, say like the one you just said, there are so many things right now that sound on the surface, oh my God, that's outlandish. Like playing with a very limited face mask, which would mean that players would be less likely to to attack a ball carrier, you know, or to attack a quarterback, you know, with the helmet, because they just don't have protection on their face. And you say, well, that's ridiculous. Well, all I can say is this: with this commissioner, just having been around him now for a while, all things are open, and he's open to hearing any ideas. Did you ever think you'd hear a day when John Madden would be on a committee talking about player safety, and John Madden would be considering the likelihood or the thought of having some practices, you know, being mandatory non-contact, mandatory no helmet? I mean, there's all kinds of ideas out there that are very, very different, but they're also interesting. And, you know, everybody in the game, people who cover it, people who watch it, people who are in it, should be considering them.
Talking with Peter King of NBC and Sports Illustrated here on the Michael Kay Show, 1050 ESPN New York. I know you're a voter for the NFL Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And this just struck me as so odd, and I want to get your take on it, because I'm sure it doesn't have much weight at all. And they're one of the sponsors, for Mike and Mike. But Van Usen is running a program where fans could actually vote for the Hall of Fame. Now, I don't care if it counts, you know, an infinitesimal amount.
It doesn't count, though.
But what's this thing about, then?
It's fans telling football and telling the selectors, these are the guys who we want. And I'm all for anything that gets fans closer to the game and all that stuff, but I told somebody this who was absolutely haranguing me about Floyd Little.
Okay.
And telling me that, you know, basically, you're an absolute know-nothing idiot if you don't vote for Floyd Little for the Hall of Fame. And I said back, well, here's a guy who had one 1,000-yard season in his career, who averaged 3.9 yards a carry, I mean, I'm going to consider his case for the Hall of Fame, but to say that, you know, it's so certain that it's automatic, when I tell you those two things, I mean, there are 500 running backs in history who you could say those two things about. Why aren't they up for the Hall of Fame? But anyway, this is such a passionate topic. It inflames the masses so much that I think what the NFL tried to do and the Hall of Fame tried to do is basically say, we're going to let fans come on our website and have at it. But Michael, the bottom line is, and I again, I'm not trying to demean what they're doing. It means absolutely nothing.
Well, good, because no fan should decide on immortality. I'm sorry.
No, it's not happening. I mean, but I got my ballot in the mail. What happens at this time of year? The list of 25 semifinalists is in our hands. And at this time of year, we have to whittle it down to 15. And then those 15 finalists, plus the two senior committee candidates, who this year, Floyd Little and Dick LeBeau, we go into a room and we debate their cases for somewhere between 6 and 7 hours on the day before the Super Bowl. And you know, again, we do that independent, really, of what the fans think.
Peter, I'm curious about the whole thing in Toronto with the Bills. I'm hearing that eventually it's going to be two games, similar to when Green Bay played two games in Milwaukee. I'm hearing other things that when Ralph Wilson passes away, that's going to usher in the Bills moving to Toronto full-time. Where do you see this whole thing going?
Don, I honestly see this as being a long-term partnership, and I understand there's a good story in the New York Times today about, or maybe it was yesterday, about how you know, the people in Buffalo are kind of bitter about losing some of their business and all that stuff, which is totally understandable. But you better think of the long term if you want to have the Bills remain in Buffalo, because financially, when Ralph Wilson does pass on, financially it's just not viable to have a team in that market anymore exclusively, unless there is some incredible influx of cash that is pumped into that area of the country that right now we just don't see. Okay, so again, that's just the hard reality of it.
Well, Peter, how can a team survive in Green Bay and not be able to survive in Buffalo?
Well, because in Green Bay it's a little bit different. In Green Bay, it basically is a state team. It is a regional team. It's a national team. I covered training camp there, I forget, about 5 years ago, and walked through the parking lot, and there were 24 states. There were license plates from 24 states represented in the parking lot watching the Packers practice that day. And spending 2 years ago, the Packers Pro Shop generated $17 million of income from walk-in sales alone. That's in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Green Bay is just different. Mm-hmm. It just is. And, you know, they're going to fill that place and sell luxury boxes forever. Okay? It's just different in Western New York. They're going to go absolutely nuts over the Bills. But going absolutely nuts and being able to support that team in the manner in which it could be supported in other markets. Look, Ralph Wilson will never, if Ralph Wilson lives to 110, that team will be there until Ralph Wilson's 110. That team will be there the next 18 years. But, you know, if he does pass on before then, it'll be a candidate to move. I believe long term that, you know, the Green Bay scenario was that it was 5-3 at the end. It was five games in Green Bay, three in Milwaukee, until the demise of that, and they started playing the games exclusively in Green Bay. But I believe at the end of the day, it'll be something like 5-3 or 6-2. But the one problem I think the NFL is going to have in Toronto is that they say that they want to support the CFL and they're all for the CFL. Well, I don't know how you do that when you have a CFL team, the Argonauts, they're playing in the same building, and then you're trying to sell tickets to the Bills. I mean, anybody's going to want to see the NFL team over a CFL team, I would think, locally. So it's almost like you're at cross purposes there.
Well, I've heard that before, and I don't know how how it would affect the Argonauts. But if you look at the CFL, they play games on Thursdays and Fridays. They play during the week.
Right.
I'm not even saying,
Don, that it's a head-to-head thing. I'm just talking about just in general. You know, the NFL has basically signed on to play 8 games in a 5-year span, and you figure that a couple of those in there will end up being preseason games. But I just think long-term that, you know, it's going to be tough if you have a game at some point in October there. Can't play every game in December or very late in the year after the CFL season is over. And you know, plus a lot of those games you play late in the year, you want to play them in Buffalo so you get the home field advantage. So I don't know. It's fraught with problems, but I do think long-term, if the NFL had its druthers, it would have a split franchise.
Peter King of SI and NBC is our guest. Before I let you go, Vikings-Cardinals is the NBC Football Night in America game. We have about 30 seconds. Is Brett Favre the MVP of the league?
I don't think, well, shoot. I mean, I right now, if I had to pick one, I'd have Manning by an absolute nose over Favre. I just think Manning has less around him on offense. He's got a lesser offensive line. He's got a lesser running game for sure. The receivers are probably about the same, but two of the receivers are brand new, Colley and Garcon. So I'd give it to Manning, but I'll tell you this. I'm really happy we got 5 weeks left, so one of those guys will become clear, either one of those two or Drew Brees.
Great stuff, Peter. As always, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
All the best, guys. Take care.
This has been the Michael K. Show Podcast. Exclusive interviews and nonstop Team 1050 coverage. Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show Podcast.